You are listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is John Elter, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio, and I believe this is our 49th edition. We won't have the balloons and whistles and whatnots yet. Brendan Lear joins us now from Edmonton, Alberta. You got your kazoos and whistles ready for the next show, buddy, to cheer the 50th show?
Nah, I'm not really fond of the show.
Yeah.
I think it's the quality's gone way down.
Maybe you should play taps for the 50th show.
If we pick it up for the 100th, then I'll maybe get one of those buzzy paper things that goes out when you blow into it.
Yeah, well, that could be that's probably another 6-7 months away, buddy. If you look at the show so far, I think we've been on the air since early June, so of 2006. So it's still a ways away. A lot can happen.
All right, you're supposed to buy me like a diamond pendant or something for a 50th show.
For the 1500. Show. Yeah, that's in your contract. But for the 49th show...
I think I'm getting some platinum teeth so I can click them on the air.
Yeah. Well, you're not too far off from needing dentures, so...
Those hurt my dentures. Thanks a lot.
For the 49th show, we've got a pretty outstanding lineup tonight, and really probably would have been better suited. We should have had, like, just you nattering on for 50 minutes or however long. And save these two guests for the 50th show because we've got Travis Luter and Mike Swick coming on the program, Brendan. And it doesn't get much better than that as far as top-level middleweight fighters go in the UFC.
It doesn't. It'll be a good show.
Yeah. Well, let's get right into it. We've got Mike Swick and Travis Luter coming on the program. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With a Full Contact Fighter shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Hey, guys, Jason the Athlete McDonald, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining the program now is Mr. Travis Luter. He's going to be taking on Anderson Silva for the UFC Middleweight Championship, February 3rd. Travis, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good. How are you guys doing?
I can't complain, thanks. My first question for you, Travis, we'll get into more of the specifics about the upcoming fight against Anderson, but... what's this fight like for you as far as fighting for the title, main event? I would imagine this has got to be the defining point of your career thus far.
Yeah, could be more excited about it. I like my chances in the fight. I think Anderson Silva is one of the best strikers out there in the game, and I'm excited to go out there and test myself against him.
Yeah.
Travis, your road to this fight was by many accounts fairly easy. You were picked as a favorite in the reality show. Were you surprised at your success at all, especially in the last fight? Kelsey and I have both watched Cote getting better and better jiu-jitsu along the way. Were you surprised at the mistakes he made during that fight?
You know, I thought I was going to win the fight, you know, and I expected it early, just not quite that early, you know, for him to give up a mistake that early. I really did think I was going to get him pretty early on.
And you mentioned Anderson's striking capabilities, Travis, and of course they're very well documented. And we've had a couple fighters on the show, and some of the better UFC middleweight fighters, and they all kind of agree that his ground capabilities, we haven't really seen him go to the ground too much in the last couple of years. And then you hear that he recently got his black belt under the Nogueira brothers, etc. What's your guess at where he's at, Anderson, as far as his ground skills, Travis?
You know, I'm sure he's good, you know. You know, like I saw him, I guess I watched the tape, as most people have, of him fighting Jeremy Horn, and, you know, Horn having, you know, troubles with him, you know. Once he got into the ground, he didn't pass ever. He got reversed once. You know, a good fight, you know, probably not Jeremy's best fight. But at the same time, you know, it's like he could be a black belt. You know, I'm sure if the Nogueira brothers gave him a black belt, he's good and stuff, but, you know, there's a big difference in between black belts, too, and, you know, I consider myself a very, very good black belt, and, you know, and I really think it comes down to his wrestling, you know, it's like, if I can take him down, I'm going to win the fight. If I can't, then it's going to be a long night for me. Mm-hmm.
Travis, talk a little bit more about that, the distinction you see between now Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belts, now that there's becoming a proliferation of American black belts. How do you compare yourself against other black belts, especially ones that you've never competed against in proper jiu-jitsu competitions? How do you size each other up, especially in relation to MMA?
You know, in jiu-jitsu terms, you know, I've been beating black belts for a long time. You know, the second time I went to Abu Dhabi, I fought a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. I think he was a Hicks and Gracie black belt, if I remember correctly. Tough guy, you know, but I beat him, and, you know, I beat other black belts along the way. As far as in regards to MMA, you know, I think, you know, most MMA fighters have a little ways to go before they're going to be, you know, all the way to, you know, the level in most MMA fighters' jiu-jitsu isn't quite there. You know, it's, you know, probably a hole. You know, just like, you know, you could say the same thing about my stand-up. You know, it's like my stand-up is definitely not a world-class kickboxing or boxing, so I you know, I'm never going to claim to be that either. You know, I can knock you out if you make a mistake. You know, I hit hard as most guys do, but, you know, it's just part of the game. Everybody's going to have a hole.
Well, you mentioned the wrestling, and that you figured is going to be the key component to whether or not you can take Anderson down, obviously. And when you look at your career, Travis, the only times that you've really had troubles in your career, two of your losses were against two of the better wrestlers that come to mind in the middleweight division, in the UFC, or MMA for that matter, Matt Lindland, Trevor Prangley. And on the reality show, everybody talked about your outstanding wrestling capability. So where would you rank yourself in wrestling? You talked about your striking. You've talked about your jiu-jitsu. Where would you put yourself as far as wrestling goes?
You know, I'm a good, you know, good wrestler. You know, I was a decent collegiate guy and stuff like that. You know, am I as good as Matt Lindland? No. Did I take him down once? Yeah. You know, I'm dangerous there. You know, I'm a different fighter than I was then. In some ways, in a lot of ways, I'm the same. You know, it's everybody's you know, you're going to get better and better. Yeah, and that's kind of the nature of the beast, I guess, is to try to improve and improve. And I think I've done a lot of improving as far as my wrestling takedowns. And, you know, it's going to be fun.
Travis, one thing you share in common with a lot of the great MMA wrestlers who've transitioned into MMA is a sort of non-plusness or calmness, or I don't want to say indifference, but a relative ease with competition and easing into competition. Do you think wrestlers, because collegiate wrestlers especially, because they've competed so many times, just have a different attitude towards competing when they move into professional fighting and MMA?
Yeah, I really do. You know, it's like a lot of the guys. You know, when you have over 200 matches, you know, like I did in high school and things like that. You know, that's a lot of matches, and that's hard to duplicate. You know, that's a but you see the same sort of calmness in your world champion. You know, like jiu-jitsu guys, and you see your kickboxing, the guys like Maurice Smith who have came in. You know, these guys are really calm also, you know, and it's, you know, that's what usually works for them and makes them successful is the fact that, you know, they can put themselves up into that place to be able to compete without using a lot of energy and stuff like that and taking away from their actual performance so that they don't just go out there and fizzle real quick. You know, these, having all that experience is very, very helpful in my opinion.
I wanted to ask you, Travis, about your experiences on the last Ultimate Fighter show. And near the end, and we always like to, you know, I guess you always have to clarify with guys on the shows whether it was through editing or how accurate the portrayal was, but they seemed to try to indicate that you had some frustration with the fact that some of the guys were out of the competition by the end as you got ready for the semifinals, etc.
That was more editing than anything. I got injured the day after my first fight, and I wasn't actually able to train with my team until like 3 days left before the fight, you know. And yeah, by that point in time, there was nobody hardly left to train with, you know. There was lots of injuries and things like that, you know. It's like, and that's the part that was cut out in even my interview, you know. So yeah, there was some guys not training, you know. Like we get up to go with morning to the morning workout, yeah, there wouldn't be a lot of guys going to the morning workout, but that was conditioning workout, stuff like that. And like I said, I only got to roll three times, and I never got to wrestle once or spar before my last fight, you know, because of the, I actually tore my pec, and, you know, I was still pretty injured during the fight, so that was, you know, it's just editing mostly.
Well, then let me ask you about whether or not it was editing. It's in a sense almost anticlimactic because, of course, they brought Rich Franklin on the show, and the plan had been for would have been you fighting Rich Franklin if he had gotten by Anderson Silva, and of course that's all changed. But how accurate was that? The show seemed to try to portray Rich as being sort of not really willing to train with you guys. They seem, you know,
Rich was injured. Yeah. Rich was injured, you know. He you know, he just came off his fight with David Luaza when he broke his hand and broke his foot or broke one hand and an ankle or whatever. Yeah, and he just had surgery, so he couldn't train. You know, and it's like I walked up to him on camera. I mean, everything was on camera, and asked him, "Hey, are you training today?" And you know, he said he couldn't train because of you know, his injuries and stuff. So that was more, you know, they brought him onto the show. And what else is he supposed to do if you can't train? You can't train. You know, neither could Chuck, you know. Chuck was injured at the time. He just had his toe surgery. So it wasn't like he was the only one who couldn't, you know, when they came on the show, couldn't work out with us. You know, Matt could work out with us. Stuff like that, but I was injured at the time too. You know, I couldn't train with him, even if he would have been able to train.
Yeah, and as far as his, they tried to look like they pieced together some comments from him about how hard the guys were training, or trying to make it seem like he didn't think people were training so hard. You think that was also just more so?
That was probably a little more Rich. You know, I think Rich, you know, he's probably like, you know, if it's wrote down on the paper that you're supposed to, that he's supposed to do something that day, you know, Rich is going to do it, you know, and it's tough, you know. We'd already been there for over a month when he got there, and, you know, we've been training every day and stuff like that. It's just like the editing that made our team look like it wasn't as training as hard as the other team. You know, we were training just as hard as they were, you know, I think, you know, or at least I was. We're training really, really hard, you know. But, you know, it's like when you're injured, you're injured. When you're tired, you're tired. And, you know, it's so that was probably a little more accurate in that sense, in that, you know, he was probably, you know, when the gray team wasn't training that morning, they were taking that morning off. You know, he's probably like, what the hell? This is, you guys are supposed to be working out. Yeah. Well, man, we've been here for a long time. So, you know, that happens though. You know, you get coaches that come in, or, you know, guys that are supposed to be acting as coaches, they come in and they see something and, you know, they forget that how long you've been there, you know, and that's why you always want to have a coach that's been there the whole time. You don't want to have somebody come in halfway and start trying to tell you what to do, you know, so it's like, that's just more of the nature of the beast, you know. In my opinion, it's not anything against Rich or, you know, more the, you know, kind of his attitude towards training versus, you know, our reality.
Yeah.
So,
Travis, are you still teaching at all, or did you have an opportunity to train full time for this fight, or are you still rolling around with some jiu-jitsu students?
And I rolled around with my guys tonight. You know, today was supposed to be my day off, and I ended up working out with my guys. You know, but I've got my school where it runs pretty efficiently as far as the teaching. I don't have to teach a lot. You know, I can teach as much as I want to when I'm training for a fight. I've got enough guys that fill in the blanks as I'm getting ready for a fight that, the students aren't really losing anything with me training for a fight. In the past, it's been tougher, you know, because, you know, it's like I got to give 100% of my attention to fighting. And my students would suffer, but I've got to set up a lot better so that now that they don't really suffer in that regard.
Have you noticed a difference in your clientele? And one of the things that Kelsey and I often talk about in their show is that MMA can really – MMA – I mean, unlike guys who watch football on Saturday afternoons, you know, you can't go out and play professional football, but you actually can go to a gym and you actually can learn how to do jiu-jitsu and take classes and roll and stuff like that. Are you seeing a lot more sort of ordinary folks coming in to do jiu-jitsu than you did 5, 6, 7 years ago?
You know, the success of MMA in general, you know, is definitely helping my business. You know, it's brought attention to jiu-jitsu. You know, before, people would come in and ask what jiu-jitsu was, and that's a lot less common thing now. You know, they come in and they're fairly educated as far as what jiu-jitsu is and things like that, what I'm going to be offering. So that, I think, helps a lot, you know, as far as me signing up a new guy and having new people joining. You're just... The education level of the general public is becoming a lot better, and because of that, you know, people come in a lot more educated, know exactly what they want when they walk in the door, rather than, oh, is this like karate or, you know, whatever sort of question, you know.
Well, you're in Fort Worth, Texas, and there's I think three events just off the top of my head coming to Texas in the next couple months. You got the IFL, the IFA, and the UFC is probably going to be there in a few months as well. How is the sport as far as recognition and becoming mainstream in Texas, in your neck of the woods, Travis?
You know, as far as me personally, you know, I'm starting to get noticed a little bit more and more by the general public. You know, you'll have people, you know, when you're eating and things like that, and you're out and about, people coming up to you, you know, saying, hey, I saw you on TV. You know, good luck, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, so it started too, but I think, you know, Texas is still a little behind compared to a lot of states in that, you know, we just recently have MMA become legal. And because of that, we don't have as many, fans as, you know, a lot of other states, you know, so we're probably a little behind a lot of states in that regard. And yeah, we've got some shows coming. You know, I heard the UFC's interesting coming, et cetera. But, you know, it's going to take time, you know, just like anything. You know, it's, you know, as the general public is getting more and more, you know, educated on what it is, you know, it's people are coming around. But, you know, and Texas is a very, you know, football, lots of professional sports in Texas already. You know, so it's a, you know, big you know, to even run a show in Texas takes a lot of, you have a lot of competition versus, you know, a lot of other places that don't have as, you know, many, you know, we've got, you know, we've got the Rangers, we've got the Dallas Cowboys, we've got the Houston, you got San Antonio Spurs, you know, you just go down the list of all the different professional teams, and then, you know, and then you got the minor leagues also, to compete with when these guys are thinking about putting on a show. So I think that that actually, you know, because of all the competition, for people's dollars, when it comes to weekend time, you know, it makes it a little tougher than it, you know, if you're in the middle of the Midwest, where there's not a lot of other professional sports. You know, people tend to, oh, there's something going on this weekend, let's go do that.
You should throw in
Travis, the UFC has put a lot of emphasis in the last year or two about marketing mixed martial arts to the Latino population in the U.S. and in Central and South America. Do you see, as a guy on the street, MMA and jiu-jitsu picking up in the Latino community? And I guess the idea was the sort of love of boxing and other combative sports would transition over. So as a sort of guy who runs a business, do you see that transition happening?
Not yet. Not where I'm at. You know, it's like I've got a few Hispanic guys in my gym, but I've always had a few. And I haven't really noticed an insurgence of them or anything like that. So, I personally, no, I haven't saw any difference. Am I hoping? Yeah, I hope freaking the UFC goes to Mexico and you know, becomes more popular down there. I hear it's, you know, a huge part of the boxing market. You know, that'll just, you know, the more popularity it is, you know, the better it is for us fighters. So I hope it's becoming more popular, but I really can't answer that yes or no.
Travis, before we let you go, I just wanted to hear your quick thoughts on a couple fights that are coming up and have a lot of impact on the UFC middleweight division, and in particular the upcoming title shots. Rich Franklin versus Jason McDonald. Travis, what are your thoughts on Jason McDonald so far, and who do you see winning that fight?
You know, I really think Rich is too big, too strong, too well-rounded for Jason probably to deal with, you know, and you know, I know that, you know, he was the underdog in these other fights and stuff like that, like against Lieben and stuff, but I just think, you know, there's a big difference in between Lieben and Rich. You know, Rich is, you know, really, really tough. And not that Lieben's not tough. Lieben's really dangerous, you know, and he's also tough, but he's just not near as well-rounded as Rich. And, you know, Rich is really good on the ground. He's really good on his stand-up. You know, and he's just too big, too dangerous for Jason, in my opinion.
And it was just made official today, Patrick Cote, Scott Smith. You got to see those guys a lot, obviously, at the reality show. So who do you pick in that fight?
I'm picking Scott, actually. Yeah. I think Scott is the more well-rounded of the two. You know, I got to fight them both, and, you know, Scott's a really good wrestler. And you know, and he's not afraid to bang. And, you know, granted, anything can happen on their feet, but the difference being that, you know, Scott can go out there, get tagged, and take him down and do what he needs to do after that. You know, it's like, and survive. You know, whereas if Patrick gets tagged, he can't take Scott down. And if Scott wants to, you know, let's say the fight's close, you know, he can win a round or two just by taking him to the ground once or twice and, you know, influencing the decision that way. So I really, you know, granted, anything can happen. Anybody can get knocked out on any given day. But, you know, it's like if it goes to a decision, I have to bet on Scott. And I feel Scott will probably win that fight.
Last one real quick, Dean Lister, Nate Marquardt.
Oh man, that was a tough one to call. Yeah. You know, you got two guys that, you know, it's like they're both pretty tough. And man, I'm not betting on that one.
Brennan, you have
Travis, my last question for you is another speculation on a fight, and this just sort of came to the surface today, and it looks like there's some serious discussions with with Matt Lindland to fight Fedor Emelianenko in Russia in the springtime. Now, I'm not going to ask you who's going to win that fight, but I'm going to ask you to speculate about the ratio of the proportion that Matt Lindland has of balls to common sense. You think it's like 10 to 1, or is that, you think I'd be off base?
I guess he's in a no-lose situation. You know, it's like nobody in their right mind is going to pick him to win. And, you know, if he does go in there and get lucky and do something, I don't know what the hell it's going to be to beat him, but, you know, I don't know, man. he's crazy. He's tough, though, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of people thought he was crazy for fighting Rampage, and I personally think he won that fight.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that fight actually comes to be. And yeah,
but there's just something that you want to see it, though. It's not like another freak match, you know. It's like one of those ones you want kind of want to see.
Dude, yeah, I mean, I'll be able to see it, you know.
Do you want to call out Fedor Emelianenko right now, Travis?
No. Fedor and I are safe. If they want me to fight him, you know, that's fine. You know, that's great. But I'm not going to go ask him for that fight. You know, I haven't asked for any fights yet. I'm not going to start with that one.
All right,
Travis. Start asking, because this is they set you up with a tough one to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's okay though. You know, it's that was the contract, and you know, Anderson, I like the idea. I think, you know, styles make fights, and I think I have the style to beat him. You know, it's not going to be another stand-up fighter. I think he's the best stand-up fighter at 185 pounds.
And, did you ever think when you were filming the show that everyone had Rich and Matt Hughes lined up? Do you think anyone ever thought that maybe those two wouldn't be fighting?
Man, you know, I picked Anderson over Rich. You know, that's just that was my pick. But I did not pick GSP over Matt. You know, I guess I should have. You know, I saw GSP training, and he's a madman. You know, he trains crazy hard, and he's a driven individual. I just really thought, you know, Matt's wrestling would probably be too good for him. But I was obviously wrong, and you know, that was a big surprise to me. You know, he's, you know, my hat's off to GSP. You know, he's a stud, man. I can't wait to see the rematch.
Yeah. Well, Travis, we appreciate you coming on the show as you get ready for the upcoming February 3rd fight against Anderson Silva. Travis Luter, best of luck on the 3rd, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Good luck, Travis.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Mixed martial arts history will be made as the International Fight League continues its 2007 inaugural season, Friday, February 2nd at the Reliant Arena. See Boss Rutan's Anacondas battle Pat Miletich's Silverbacks and Antonio Inoki Sabres face off against Don Fry's Scorpion. Plus, the super fight between MMA legends Matt the Law Lindland and Carlos the Rona Newton. Be there Friday, February 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at the Reliant Arena. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 713-629-3700 or log on to Ticketmaster.com.
Does your neighborhood sound like this every night? Well, if it does, maybe it's time you get ready to rumble and pick up some instructional martial arts DVDs from the Full Contact Fighter website. FCFighter.com has a great assortment of DVDs, and if you feel you can learn how to scrap just by watching the pros fight, then take a look at our great selection of MMA events from all over the globe. FCS prices will not be beat. Head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again, 516-676-0033.
Full Contact Fighter.
Undefeated, no holds barred, news source of the world.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Mike Quick-Swick. Mike, how are you doing this afternoon?
Good, man, good.
Mike, the first question I have for you, there's a lot of speculation and rumors going around, whether it's on some of the MMA forums, etc., about what's going on for you next in the UFC. And a lot of people are speculating that you might be fighting Yushin Okami at the upcoming March card. Can you confirm that?
Not at this moment.
No.
That's what we're working on.
Okay.
So that's what we're working on, but it isn't confirmed yet. I mean, we haven't done the deal for sure yet.
Right.
And so that you know, that's pretty much all I can say right now. But we're definitely trying to work the March or April card, but I just don't know right now.
Well, on the topic of Yushin, what are your thoughts on him? You know, he's been on a streak in the UFC as of late. Are you impressed with Akami?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
That's why I want to fight him. He's a very good fighter. You know, 19-3 overall. Very good wins. He seems to be very well-rounded. I'm definitely impressed with him.
And when you look at some of the wins he's had recently, the one that kind of that impressed me the most, I think I would say, was his win over Caleb Starnes. Did you get a chance to see that fight?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was a good win for him. Looks like he completely shut Caleb down and then finished him off.
Well, like I mentioned, I think a lot of people have been kind of curious and wondering what's in store for you next. And your last fight was in September. And it's been a little bit of a layoff for you. Did you at the time after defeating Loaiza think that it'd be this long between that fight and this one?
Well, I busted my hand up in the fight.
Oh, right.
And I didn't know how serious it was going to be right after the fight. Mm-hmm. But it turned out that it took a long time to heal, so it kind of set me back quite a bit.
Yeah.
I was able to do a lot of stuff though, like to stay training and stuff. But you know, I couldn't obviously punch. I couldn't spar. I couldn't do any of that stuff, so
when were
that
you
definitely set me back.
When were you able to resume full-out sparring?
A few weeks ago, I guess about 3 weeks I've been sparring, 2.5-3 weeks. And you know, mitt work maybe 2 weeks, because when I hit the mitts, it seems to put a lot more, you know, it's a lot more solid when I hit with the mitts than when I actually spar. It's still, I mean, it's not 100%, but I mean, I'm getting what I need done, so I'm grappling full on, sparring, doing mitt work, doing all that. So, I mean, I'll be ready by March or April, so.
Well, if something can't be worked out with a comment, you mentioned that you'd like to fight him. Is there anyone else immediately that you think you'd like to get in against, that there's a reasonable chance of that fight getting signed?
Just whoever. It just depends on how these other fights go. I mean, there's a lot of middleweight fights coming up. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, just whoever they have for me, I'm ready to fight. Prefer to be a tough guy, you know, a solid guy, and that's why I think Yushin will be a great opponent. He's 3-0 in UFC, 1-0 in Pride, and you know, 19-3 overall. And two of those three losses that he has, you know, I heard a lot of controversy over as far as they were split decisions and stuff, and he could possibly win those. So, I mean, he's pretty much only been stopped for sure. You know, lost one solid loss to Soliath.
Well, that's why you're an interesting guy to have on the show, and even especially right now, because you, of course, are one of the top contenders in the UFC middleweight division, and there's a lot of things that have transpired since the last time we had you on the program. We had you on the show just a couple days removed from your win over David Loaiza, and since that time, you know, Rich Franklin's been unseated, Anderson Silva's come to the forefront, he's got a big fight coming up against Travis Luter. I'd like to get your thoughts really quickly. I know it's kind of dated right now, but what were your thoughts on at the time you had picked Rich to beat Anderson? I think a lot of people did, but a lot of people thought it was going to be a really, really tough fight for Rich. What were your thoughts on that fight with Anderson while we have you here, Mike?
I mean, it was, of course it was shocking. I mean, nobody expected Rich to get beat as quick as he did. I mean, I knew that if anyone could do it, it was Anderson Silva, especially the way he did it. But I don't think anyone expected to be that dominantly and that fast. It looked like either he got into Rich's head or Rich might have had problems going in, but he didn't seem all there, and he definitely wasn't game for the fight, and Silva just took over. You know, it was two impressive wins by him, and I guess we'll see how he does against Luter. I'm hoping personally that Luter can get him to the ground, and we can kind of open up some of his ground game and see, you know, how he does. And I personally think Luter has a great ground style for MMA, and if he does get Luter down, I'm sorry, if he gets Silva down, it could be a competitive match. Obviously, I give the edge on a feet to Silva. I mean, I definitely hope Luter gets him down.
And as well, since that time, there's a couple other guys have come into the UFC since we last had you on the program, and Jason McDonald, I think, is probably the one that comes to my mind right off the top of my head, and he took out Ed Herman and Chris Lieben, and now I think some people were somewhat surprised when they announced that Rich Franklin was going to fight Jason on the March card. What are your thoughts on that, Mike? Were you surprised as well when that fight was signed?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, that is a little surprising. I mean, he's only had a couple fights in the UFC. He does have pretty good wins, obviously, over Ed Herman and Chris Lieben, but you know, I was definitely surprised to find out that he was fighting Franklin, but that's what they're going to do. it's going to be a tough fight for McDonald. I mean, he obviously had a good chance against Leibman because of the ground game. I don't think Leibman's ground game is that great. But against, you know, someone like Rich Franklin, it's going to be a lot tougher fight for him.
And even standing, I mean, what have you been impressed with Jason's stand-up ability so far? I know even Jason said that in his fight against Chris that he thought if he fought a terrible first round. Do you see some weaknesses in McDonald's game that, that Rich can exploit?
Definitely. I mean, as far as Rich is concerned, yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was actually, I mean, Leibman was doing okay on the feet with him. I give the edge, obviously, to Leibman. He was landing some good, solid shots and had Jason on the run. But then when he went to the ground, obviously that was Jason's territory. But, you know, Franklin's going to push that pressure, and, you know, he's got that, you know, pretty aggressive stand-up, and he's pretty well-rounded. So, I mean, it's going to be a tough fight for Jason. But, man, if Jason somehow beats Franklin, that's going to be a huge spring into the UFC with Herman, Leibman, and Franklin.
Yeah, there's no
made his mark
that.
For sure. So it's a great opportunity. I mean, he has to say yes and go for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I know even Jason, he's been on our show a couple times, and before the fight with Rich was announced, he even mentioned that he'd like to fight you down the stretch somewhere. He'd fought a lot of former Ultimate Fighter competitors, obviously both guys so far. Did you think that was maybe a chance after he beat Chris that they might give you a call and see if you wanted to step up against Jason?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see it as you, I mean, yeah, I definitely thought it would be that way. I mean, I don't think it would be the way you said it, but, I mean, it would be a tough fight, and he has a good win over Leibman, but, yeah, I definitely thought after that fight that, it'd be an opponent for me, but it turned out to be Franklin. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was, hoping Leibman would win. I wasn't necessarily hoping he would win for Jason's sake, but I was hoping Leibman would win for my sake, because if he had won that fight, I wanted him next, you know, and we were pretty much backstage begging Joe Silva that if he did win, to get that fight, and then he goes out there and didn't win.
So yeah. Well, that
doesn't really help out the fighter now.
That steals some of my thunder out of my next question, because I was going to ask you about that, was whether or not you thought the loss to McDonald sort of set that fight back with Chris, and the last time you were on our show, you had mentioned that you thought a rematch with Chris would happen eventually. Now, do you think it's probably pushed back a little bit because of Chris's last loss?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to fight eventually, but it does nothing for my career right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he had to beat McDonald, he would have been establishing himself back and getting a few wins, and, you know, it would be a good fight at the time. But right now, it's like I want to fight top contenders and top-level guys in the UFC to try to get as close to that title as I can, you know? I mean, that's my goal. It's my career's first, you know, and I think it's a big step backwards to fight Leibman right now. He has everything to gain. I have everything to lose in that fight.
Well, you already talked about Travis Luter a little bit and about his chances against Anderson Silva. What were your thoughts, Mike, on the crop of middleweights that were you know, highlighted in the last season of Ultimate Fighter? Patrick Cote fighting Travis Luter, of course, in the finals. And so, kind of a two-part question: did you expect Travis to submit Patrick in the fashion he did that quickly? And what were your thoughts on some of the other guys' performances, like Jorge Rivera or Edwin Duiz, whoever?
Yeah, you know, definitely Luter had a chance to submit him, and I definitely saw that as a possibility. you know, Luter's a tough fighter. I actually fought on the same card as Luter in 1998 in my first pro show, oddly enough. But, I mean, he's been in this business for a long time, and he's a tough guy, so I definitely thought he had a good chance of winning the show. And, you know, Cote has a submission win over Jason McDonald.
Yeah.
You know, so it's odd looking at Jason's record, because he's kind of a hot or cold fighter, you know? I mean, he seems to be doing a lot better, but, I mean, he actually has a loss over Shoney and a loss over Cote. And now he's got two huge wins over, you know, Ed Herman and Leibman. But I think he's definitely starting to make his mark and get his good training and get a lot better. But as far as Luter, I mean, like I said, I want to see him get Silva down. I definitely think he's a game opponent. And Cote's had just a rough ride, man. He's had some tough fights and hasn't really been able to find his footing in the UFC, so...
Yeah, well, and one other great middleweight fight that's coming up as well, and I think sometimes both these fighters kind of get sort of forgotten about a little bit in the middleweight division, and they certainly shouldn't be, is Dean Lister versus Nate Marquardt. And both those guys have the potential to be a contender, in my opinion, in that division. What are your thoughts on both those guys, Mike?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, they're both very good. Mark Wirt's got a great background, a lot of good wins, a lot of experience, and, you know, Lister's a good grappler. So, I mean, I think that's going to be a very competitive fight. On the side of more well-roundedness, I'm going to give the edge to Mark Wirt. I think overall he's a better MMA fighter, but, you know, if Lister can put something on him, then, you know, he could win that way. So I'm very excited to see that fight, actually. And again, yes, both of them are, you know, contenders for sure.
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned, you know, you haven't been on the show, and it was about 4 months ago, and in that time, Mike, there's so much has gone on in the UFC organization. Of course, Anderson Silva had already been brought into the organization, but since then, they've brought in Quinton Jackson, Heath Herring, Rick or Pro Cop, bought out the WFA, and WC is part of it now. What's that like for you, Mike, as a UFC fighter and fighting exclusively with the UFC, and you do Real Quick with Mike Swick for the company? Your thoughts on the UFC, the way they ended the 2006 with all those big acquisitions?
Man, they're getting huge. It's good news for everyone who's fighting for them, I think. So, I mean, I'm just excited to be a part of them at this time. I think it's the best time in the world to be a part of the UFC. It's exploding, and, you know, it's one of those things where every day you find out something new that they're doing, you know, some new show and some new acquisition, like you said, and, you know, it's just great, you know. You never know what's next, and it's just great to be a part of a company like that.
And for some people that haven't necessarily seen your segments that you do for the website, tell us a little bit about that Real Quick with Mike Swick.
It's just a behind-the-scenes kind of thing. It's just basically my own show, and I kind of just get a camera crew and do whatever I want at the events. Sometimes I'll go to, like, red carpets, like the VGAs and stuff like that, talk to celebrities, and I'll show, like, behind-the-scenes of UFCs, what it's like. To give a fan's perspective on what it's like to be a fighter and getting ready for a fight and walking out and stuff like that. And then recently I got attacked by a canine at the Marine Base in San Diego, Miramar.
Ah, I didn't see that one.
Anything I can do for entertainment. It seems the funniest thing is of all the ones I did, the one getting attacked by the dog is definitely the most popular and I've gotten the most feedback for. So I guess my pain and anguish is good for entertainment, because everyone seems to like me getting taken down by the dog.
Well, I'll have to check that out. Like, is this, I just saw the last one where you show on what it's like to be backstage, etc., but I didn't see the dog one yet. Is this like...
It was the one right before that, yeah.
Are you exaggerating? You're actually attacked by a dog, or is this kind of a way of luring us to watch, and it was like a dog playing?
No, I put the suit on and, like, run and get slammed on my head. Twice.
Nice.
Yeah. It's going to be me and Cisco in the next UFC. That's my opponent.
Well, and another thing, too, with the UFC, and as you mentioned, they ended the year with all those big signings, et cetera, on the business side of things. And as well, the Natural, Randy Couture, coming back. How were you very surprised when you heard that, especially in light of the fact that he's coming back to fight Tim Sylvia in the heavyweight division, Mike?
No, not at all. I knew he was coming back. I had a feeling, man, because I interviewed him a long time ago when he retired, and I asked him if he was ever going to come back, and he didn't give me a straightforward answer. He was just kind of like, well, you know, you never know for sure, but for now. And, like, when a fighter says that, you know, he's coming back. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely not surprised. And, you know, when Randy says he's going to do something, you give him the benefit of the doubt pretty much no matter what he says he's going to do. He's just that kind of guy. So I'm very excited to see him back. He's one of my favorite fighters. I think he's a great guy. I like him as a person and a fighter, so... Yeah, I can't wait. I'm excited to see that fight.
And the jump back to heavyweight, did that surprise you?
A little bit, but I think he's got a good shot. I mean, he did good as a heavyweight. You know, I think depending on how he shows up, you know, I mean, we've only seen him fight in the light heavyweight division for the past few fights, but he did pretty well at heavyweight as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just kind of depends on how he shows up and how good a shape he's maintained over this past few months, but I'm still excited, no matter what division he fights in.
Well, you know, it's obvious what Miracle Krokop is going to bring to the heavyweight division. I mean, that instantly, you add one of the top five, arguably top three heavyweights in the world to that division. So that's going to create a lot of hype. But I've always been telling people, I think the one big acquisition that, as far as marketing and personality and charisma, has got to be Quinton Jackson, because that guy has the potential to be a huge star in North America.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, he's very charismatic, for sure.
Last question for you. You know, you see the all-access shows, etc., we see some of these, like, really nice houses with Chuck Liddell and the sweet rides and stuff like that. Mike Swick, if we were to do a show in all-access, would we see that kind of nice rides, etc., with Mike Swick stuff?
Yeah, I feel very fortunate for the things I do have. So definitely, I'm living good. But, you know, it's shocking to see, you know, I know 5 years ago, if you had seen that show with Chuck Liddell, you wouldn't have believed it, you know, because the money and stuff. But it's great to see stuff like that. And, you know, that's all of our goals, to get to that point, you know, to be driving around in a nice car, a nice house. I mean, overall, you want to be the best fighter, but it's nice when, you know, when you're done fighting and everything's over and you've made an impact and you've had a successful career, that you can sit back and then have that financial security to retire, you know, and maybe open up a gym and keep the legacy going, you know?
Yeah. Well, I know Brendan, the co-host, he's made that comment to a couple of fighters, and I think it's such an excellent point, and I bring it up to some guys who I'm sure they've thought about it, but he just brings up the fact that, you know, even 4 or 5 years ago, none of us really knew how long MMA was going to be around. I mean, or how long, whether or not it would get to the point where people would want to stick in the sport for 10, 15 years. And some of these guys, like yourself, who aren't even, you know, in their prime of their career yet, I mean, there's potential there to be fighting for 10 more years. You know, do you ever think about that? That it's so much, that if you have a loss or whatever, now it doesn't necessarily mean as much. No one likes to lose. But just the fact that you can have 10 years of competition ahead of you still?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, I was talking about that today with some of my teammates and stuff. It's like, I mean, they've created such a huge sport and established such a good company as far as the UFC and what they've acquired, that, like, there's a lot of job security for a lot of fighters who, you know, aren't the champion. And, I mean, used to a long time ago, even the best fighter in our sport had another job, you know? I mean, and now you got guys that are at the bottom of the spectrum of the big show, like UFC and stuff, that aren't even working. And you know, they're fighting full-time and living out their dream, which was always my dream, you know, because I always fought and worked. And that's hard, you know, when you work all day and then you train and you fight. So it's like, just to be able to do that was a dream come true. And then now when you see how far it's gone, where, like, Chuck and the success that some of the other guys have had and how much they're making, it's like, wow, man, it's just way beyond what the expectations were, you know? But then again, you know, there's a fan base for it. And you know, people finally realize that it's a legitimate sport that's very entertaining and you know, they've taken to it.
Yeah. Well, 2006 was a record-breaking year for mixed martial arts, and all signs point to 2007 being an even bigger year. Mike Swick, we appreciate you coming on the show, and we look forward to your return to action sometime, hopefully in March or April.
Cool, thanks, man. And you can check out my webpage also at MikeSwick.com and my MySpace at MySpace/MikeSwick. We're actually putting together a new webpage that should be up soon. And also, I have a UNICEF campaign, which you can find on my MySpace page, that I'm actually raising a lot of money for UNICEF, which helps children worldwide. And I'm going to be auctioning off my shorts and gloves, and I auction off items periodically throughout this year to try to raise money as well.
Oh, very nice. Very worthy cause. Nicely done.
All right, thanks a lot.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world, and when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and Brendan, some interesting comments from both Mike Swick and Travis Luter, and I know we kind of want to wait until we get closer to UFC 67 with Travis Luter and Anderson Silva headlining, but as far as doing breakdowns, etc., but there's a couple of fights announced today are confirmed, and the first one I wanted to ask you about is Scott Smith versus Patrick Cote, and we asked Travis a little bit about that. What are your thoughts on that fight being signed?
I think that's a decent fight. I'm not too crazy because those guys are on the show together to see them fight necessarily, but I think it'll be a good fight. It'll be, I think both of them, it's a good matchup for both of them. Smith's wrestling is, I think Cote's wrestling is a little underrated, but, you know, I think their games match up well. You know, Smith certainly, I guess Smith's the only way you can fault Smith is what else is he going to do in this fight that he, you know, that's going to overcome his highlight reel from this year. So he's got nowhere to go but down.
Yeah, well, when you look at his fight against Pete Sell, that's kind of what you have to wonder immediately as far as Patrick Cote's abilities to get the fight to the ground, because I know Patrick hits hard and he's got a great chin, but I think from what I've seen thus far, I think Scott has got the advantage standing up. So will Patrick be able to get the fight to the ground?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, well, I don't. I'm not sure if he wants to take it there necessarily. You know, I think Cote is kind of like on the cusp of the of staying in the UFC, and if he loses another fight, that could be, you know, you could make a case that might be it for him. So, you know, I think he's going to want to have an exciting fight. You know, he's got a couple things he's got to worry about: winning the fight, number one, and having an exciting fight, number two. If he doesn't win, so I'm not sure if that's something that you know it would be pragmatic for him to do in either of those.
Yeah, well, I just, like I said, it's they're both good stand-up fighters, but I think Scott Smith is on a higher level. But you know, I guess we'll see February 3rd what happens, and I could be proven wrong. I have been wrong many times before. Sam Hoger versus Lyoto Machida is the other fight that's been signed, and this is interesting. Particularly might have been more interesting if Rich Franklin had lost Anderson Silva, and I know that Rich is no longer fighting at 205, but Brendan Lyoto Machida, of course, the man who defeated Rich Franklin, had given him his only loss prior to the Silva fight, and now through the WFA buyout, he's going to be competing in the UFC.
You know, I'm not too pumped about this fight because the only time I've actually seen the Cheetah fight is in the WFA, the now defunct WFA, and that fight was terrible. It was absolutely terrible, and it's tough to get that taste out of my mouth. So it's tough for me to get worked up about this fight.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting when they brought in Machida to the WFA because they certainly were constantly bringing up the point that he had defeated Rich Franklin before.
Mm-hmm. One of the criticisms that I had of that card was that it was too much. You know, everything was like a sort of jab at the UFC, and really they should have gone out and just done the best card they could instead of, you know, having some kind of angle that all the different fights that were sort of angles that really only sort of aficionados of MMA could appreciate or really understand. So I think they put a little too much effort into thumbing the eye of the UFC. So, you know, hopefully it will be a better fight. You know, hopefully he can bring a better game plan. And, you know, Tiger White can make a lot of guys look bad.
And then you asked Travis about it, and of course this is the big news today, although it should be stressed that nothing has been signed. It sounds like they're in negotiations, and Bodog has only really confirmed that much, is that it looks like they're going to be able to put together a deal for Fedor Emelianenko taking on Matt Lindland. And that means that Matt Lindland's got to go up not one but two weight classes, Brendan. And obviously from some of the remarks you made when we were talking to Travis, you just think that this is... there's no chance he's going to be able to get a victory?
Well, it's so uncommon. You know, I'm very critical traditionally of freak show matches, and I'm not sure this is a freak show match because these guys are, you know, legitimate, and you know, each legitimate, you know, fighters and the best fighters in their own weight division, arguably. But you know, like you said, going up two weight classes is definitely something that's beyond, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily beyond the pale, because I certainly want to watch it, but, you know, I don't know what to make of it. I think Luter hit it right in the head, though. You know, he's got nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. You know, if he goes in there and puts on a good show against Fedor, takes him a couple rounds, you know, then he's won a sort of moral victory, and if he wins, like, it'll be lights out, you know?
Yeah. Well, it'd be curious to know and have an inside vantage point as far as the UFC's dealings with Matt Lindland, how hard they've tried to sign him, bring him back into the organization, of course, after Anderson Silva knocked out Rich Franklin, there was a lot of discussion. Lindland even admitted that there, he was in talks with the UFC, but clearly to this point, nothing has ever come from those discussions as far as him returning there. And, you know, you got to kind of wonder, and I don't know if this is necessarily a cynical point of view, but you have to kind of wonder if it wasn't for the likes of someone like Travis Luter, who I think is going to be very competitive against Anderson Silva. Obviously, he's going to need to get that fight to the ground, but I think it's going to be a very competitive fight. You kind of have to wonder, Brendan, if it wasn't for the likes of someone like him, Travis Luter being around, do you think that maybe the UFC would have pressed a little bit harder to get Lindland back fighting for them? I mean, if he's talking, having discussions with Bodog Fight to compete in Russia against Fedor Emelianenko, and that's several months away, one would think that there's really no sign of Lindland returning to the UFC anytime soon.
Yeah, well, I think there are fighters like Lindland, no one as now as good as he was. And obviously, you know, 2 years ago, I was not a big fan of Lindland. Actually, I thought he was an incredibly boring fighter. One could argue too that he was an incredibly boring fighter a couple of years ago. He was kind of one dimensional, and you know, I just didn't like watching him fight. It wasn't appealing to me. But that being said, you know, I think he's taken steps. At least to look better during his fights, as well, you can't argue with success, you know, and he's been incredibly successful in his last few fights. So it's all a question of do they need him or someone exactly like him that poses a similar threat? But I think Lindland's really stepped it up, and he's really made a name for himself. And but still, you know, I think the UFC is not. The UFC isn't necessarily chasing him as desperately as they were a dynamic heavyweight because still Lindland is still Lindland, and you know, he's a fantastic fighter, but he's not a highlight reel fighter, and I think the UFC is really that's the primary concern. You know, so are they going to spend the money to get Lindland, or are they going to spend the money to get someone like Krokop? And it's obviously that's where their priorities were to be found.
Yeah.
And even the Rampage fight, did you think that was an exciting fight? I thought it was an okay fight, but it didn't blow my doors off by any means.
Well, I still never saw it. I never got the pay-per-view up here. It was delayed, and I'm but on a meager income, so they never dropped the price. It was still at $30 until a few months ago on the repeat, so I never got to see it, which is too bad because I heard it was a great fight, and hopefully, maybe someday I'll be on, Hardcore Fighting Championships, or maybe the UFC will show it since they have property of it now. Maybe they'll be up on UFC On Demand or something like that. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, too, and I know sometimes this is almost seems like it's a soap opera kind of discussion, but I think people are interested in the potentials of what could come out of either man winning, and that is in the case of Anderson Silva versus Travis Luter. And, Brendan, do you think this is a case where the UFC probably would like to have Anderson Silva win and continue on for a bit so Rich Franklin can have a rematch? Or is it one of those situations where it's a win-win because Travis Luter is also a guy that they can build the middleweight division around?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think, you know, from a marketing perspective, if you have a champion who's going to defend, five fights, say, for instance, you know, how many highlight reel moments are going to come out of five Anderson Silva fights, and how many highlight reel moments are going to come out of five Travis Luter fights? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think from a business perspective, you would kind of want to expect the UFC to want to push Silva and build him up some presence. And plus, you know, you can count on the guy to wear some pretty fly clothing to fights when he's in the crowd, even. So, you know, he's a win-win, you know, all around.
Yeah, it's interesting that
you know, you're not going to see Travis Luter sitting in the stands wearing like a full length white, you know, endangered ocelot fur coat, you know. Or
well, you can't, you know, you can't predict the future, man. If he goes on to be champion, maybe things change, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
No, I know what you're saying. It certainly. You know, and that's not, and I know you're not taking anything away from Travis. He's a great jiu-jitsu specialist. But I do agree with you in the sense that you can market more around someone who can, literally, I mean, smashed the former champion's nose across his face. So that kind of fighter, that kind of ferocity, etc., probably does get people a little bit more into watching him fight than perhaps submissions do. And I'm just talking in generality, sort of. That's not necessarily my own opinion. But with Anderson Silva, it's going to be interesting to see if he does get by Travis Luter, where they go from there. And assuming that Rich Franklin, if he can beat Jason McDonald, or even if Jason McDonald beats Rich Franklin, I guess Jason would probably go up against Anderson. But let's go on the rematch thread here. If Franklin gets by McDonald and Anderson gets by Luter, how far around the corner are we going to see the UFC do one of their rematch fights, Brendan?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that depends. It'll probably depend on Franklin, how he feels after a victory, and whether he's ready to take that step again. Because I think in fights like Hughes, in fights like Hughes St. Pierre, and in fights especially like Franklin, you know, Franklin was decimated in that fight, and you got to think that it's going to require that he'd want to require some retooling, you know, after. And a little bit of lag time in there to even get up the mental inertia to fight again. Now I'm not, I think that depends. It depends as well on a particular fighter's tenacity and their mindset to begin with. So, you know, Rich is kind of like an ordinary guy. He was never an accomplished athlete before necessarily, and I don't think he necessarily competed at really high levels of competition. So. You know, after having experienced such a decimating, such a decimating loss, I think it'll be interesting to see how he rebounds from that, how he's able to rebound from that, and you know, maybe he wouldn't want a quick rematch. I don't, as in the same way that Hughes didn't want a really quick rematch with St. Pierre when it was offered to him.
Well, it's been kind of interesting in a way that because of George St. Pierre's injury, there's been more, you know, more of a focus on this main event, and of course, prior it was supposed to be a co-main event. So it's interesting to see the fans sort of all focusing on the middleweight division and what the repercussions could be of either man winning and what's down the road. And I think in that sense, really, it sort of shows that there's probably a little bit more interest, I think, about the Travis Luter-Anderson Silva fight. George St. Pierre is a huge star, and Matt Serra, very popular, and it's probably gained more fans because of the reality show. But I think, Brendan, that there's kind of more hype behind this fight now? I mean, outside of the injury factor, just because people expect it to be more compelling and more competitive than maybe George St. Pierre and Matt Serra was going to be?
Yeah, you know, we didn't hear really any hype around that fight, and I think probably for fairly good reason. I think everyone thought St. Pierre was going to walk through Serra, and not necessarily just that, but that even if Serra put up a good fight, it would still you know, wouldn't look particularly fabulous or what have you. So I think it was just tough. That's a tough matchup for Serra. I think people would have much preferred seeing a different opponent. I think they would have preferred seeing Hughes, obviously, because you know there was a, you know, Serra is very outspoken about him, and so they could have built that fight up a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But I think this is shaping up to be a fairly decent card, and unfortunately we're going to have to watch it on our telephones because we're at another card that night.
Yeah, that's true. We'll be at the MFC. I mean, maybe we can watch the repeat when we get back from the fights, etc. But you know, and we've talked about this before, and it's one thing I just kind of want to mention again just before we get out of here, but. It is kind of interesting that when you have fights like this and you sort of focus your attention on a certain division, like the UFC's middleweight division in this case, you start to really realize that, you know, the UFC has three incredibly solid divisions. I mean, the middleweight division might not be quite as deep as, say, the 170 or 155-pound division, but it's in tremendous shape because even if Travis Luter, I mean, regardless of who wins that fight, there are some future guys down the road here who can take on those either men, and it's going to be an entertaining fight. I mean, Mike Swick, clearly, we just had him on the show. He comes to mind. Rich Franklin's in the mix. You got Jason McDonald. So things are looking up for the middleweight division when, say, you know, people, it's not too long ago when people weren't really talking about it being a competitive division and then there was no one to fight Rich Franklin.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, McDonald's a good demonstration of how quickly someone can come up. I think that's McDonald was probably an exception in that there are probably fewer and fewer now that there's so many promotions out there. There are fewer and fewer fighters that are going to be sort of diamonds in the rough that are ready to go and ready to compete, you know, as soon as they come in. And I think the reality show is definitely, you know, even that's reflecting that. And the reality show started out with some really legitimate bona fide fighters that were ready to go right off the bat. And then the later shows have admitted to a few, but they're not, you know, not as many.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brendan, on that note, we'll get out of here. I guess we'll talk to you after the weekend, buddy. You have a great weekend.
And you too, Kelsey. Time to go to bed, and you get to work on that ripping BC place. I hear you got some work fixing that bad boy.
No, I'm actually not a handyman at all. So
no,
I
heard they were making the world's biggest roll of duct tape to repair that rip. Is that true?
I don't know, man. I haven't really been following it too much, to be honest. I usually, when I watch the news, I'm more concerned with international news, national news.
Right.
Even though I love my city. So I'm sorry for the listeners. If you want any updates on the BC place, don't rely on me or any of Brendan's bad jokes. You could be offending people right now, man. That stadium has a long, rich heritage, actually.
Well, I heard they're building a whole factory in Taiwan. 3M was building a whole factory in order to build the duct tape roll
to fix
that stadium.
The roof. Yeah, that could very well be. Or maybe they just won't. Maybe it'll be time to tear it down and build a new stadium similar to the one they have in Seattle. That'd be pretty nice.
Well, they got two there. Why don't they just use one of theirs?
Yeah, we should. It's not a bad idea. Retractable roofs on both, I believe. So
we're gonna have to start another podcast just to focus on our cockamamie international affair business ideas and conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I'd be up for that. If you can learn how to do the show and edit it and get the guests, etc., I'll do it.
Yeah, I've got nothing else going on in my life.
No, I don't.
No problem.
All right, on that note, we'll talk to you on Monday or Tuesday, man.
Bye-bye. Bye.